I'm Suzanne Gernant, and this is my first time reading. I'm the newbie in the group. This story is named The Beard, and it would be a chapter if I actually write the memoir I keep thinking I'm going to write. I met Bruce in 1969, the summer between junior and senior year at Northwestern. I had sublet an Evanston apartment from my friend Nathan. Dear sweet Nathan, who was supposedly doing something out of town that summer. What he was really doing was getting himself addicted to heroin and ending up in a rehab hospital in Chicago. After several desperate phone calls from Nathan, he convinced me to go to the hospital to liberate him by bringing him clothes and racing down the hallways with him to freedom. Thankfully, his parents, after a call from the hospital, soon arrived from Connecticut to take him home for treatment. That was my first experience of what hard drugs could do to someone. But this story is about Bruce. I may have met Bruce at the restaurant where I was working, down on Howard Street, where you could get a drink or a beer in those long ago days when Evanston was dry, thanks to the Women's Christian Temperance Union, who had their national headquarters in Evanston. The restaurant was a ribs and burger joint with peanut shells on the floor, before we had to all be politically correct and pay attention to everyone's food allergies. I dated him throughout that summer, although mostly I remember him coming to hang out at my sublet piece of heaven. Nathan had built this structure in the bedroom, sort of like a loft bed, except he put a large wooden office desk on the top part and the bed was below. Getting into bed was like entering a large cavern, and it was the coolest thing I'd ever experienced. I would come home after a shift at work about 1 a.m. and take off the pantyhose I'd worn with my shoes and lower legs covered in ketchup, although I never understood how the ketchup got on my legs. I would soak my sore, tired feet and crawl into my cavern. I shared the apartment with Susan, a voice major from some southern state, who would walk around the apartment singing opera and asking me to clean up my messes. The living room was big, and a couple of years earlier, it was where my first LSD trip ended, the beginning of which was fun. But that night ended by lying on Nathan's sofa, gazing at the ceiling and waiting for morning to arrive. The big event of that summer was that Apollo 11 landed on the moon, and Neil Armstrong became the first human to walk on its surface. A big group came to the apartment that evening, and we all watched together on a tiny television while smoking a lot of pot. The weathermen were getting ready to stand trial in Chicago for their actions at the Democratic Convention the year before, and Hair was still playing on Broadway. Just a few months later, I would meet the man who would become my first husband. It all felt momentous, and that summer, everything seemed possible. Bruce had just come back from California, which made him seem very cool. And he talked a lot about his friend Harry, who he seemed to idolize. I never knew what Harry's day job was. All the talk revolved about his race car and the schedule of races in the outlying suburbs of Chicago. Bruce presented himself as a tough working class guy with his big black steel-toed boots, swaggering a bit in his blue jeans, and he was Harry's car mechanic. Bruce was educated though and loved literature, so he was a bit of a mystery. He wasn't that interested in sex, although I imagine we had it. It was just not a highlight of the relationship. One weekend, we drove several hours to a car race in some small town. I have no idea where. I was just along for the ride, so to say. It was hot and dusty and loud, and there were a bunch of people in Harry's posse. I don't even know what kind of car he drove or how fast. He lost the race, and then we all went out to dinner, people talking about carburetors and wheels and gears. It was all pretty boring to me, and I didn't picture myself as a racetrack girl. Bruce went back to San Francisco for a while and was quite happy when he returned, talking about moving there soon. One day he asked me if I would join him at a Sunday dinner with his parents at their country club in one of the northwestern suburbs. That was fine with me. I was accustomed to country clubs, having grown up in that milieu. What was different for me was when he told me that the club had rules that did not allow Jewish people. Had I even told him I was Jewish? At the dinner, Bruce was all cleaned up in a pair of slacks and a sport coat, and I was in a pretty dress. We had stilted conversation with his clearly Republican parents. Mainly, I recall looking around the big, airy room with windows overlooking the leafy and green golf course, and wondering what all those people eating their nice Sunday dinners would do if I suddenly announced my Jewishness. Was I a hypocrite for not doing that and acting if I was one of them? That was something I would later come to regret. At some point, many years later, it finally dawned on me that Bruce was deep in the closet, and that's why he kept flying out to San Francisco, which was in the throes of becoming a gay haven. I would end up moving there myself just 18 months later to be with my future husband. I never thought of Bruce, though, had forgotten all about him by then. Dinner with his parents was the first and only time I was used as a beard, covering Bruce's emerging gay sexuality by a pretend romance. Finally, it all made sense.